Good morning. I am David. For those of you who don't know me, exciting. So I hope you've been enjoying the series that we've been doing on David. And there's been a lot of different angles that we've been looking at. And this morning we're looking. The title is From Pasture to Palace. Maybe that's why I'm doing it, because I was out on my pasture this morning. I'm a farmer, if anybody doesn't know. So I can relate to a lot of the background of David. And I love the story of David. I think we all do, because it's taking somebody who is fairly insignificant, little known, from the back street of some hill up a field somewhere, and all of a sudden he is the most prominent person in the country. So up until about the age of 15, his job, his role, was to look after sheep and tend sheep in the pastures. And the point of the story that we pick up this morning, he's around about 43 years of age. And he has had the most incredible series of adventures, of some of which we've looked at over the last few weeks. And a lot of these things that have happened in his life, a lot of these big events have shaped not only him and his relationship with God, but have also shaped the nation and the history of Israel. So we get to this point in the life of David at the age of 43. He is now the king over the whole of Israel. It has been a big effort. There's been a lot of opposition. There's been a lot stacked against him. But he has fulfilled that role because he knew that that was his destiny. That was something that was prophesied over him. That was something that was spoken over him. That was something that he knew was his destiny to fulfill. And here he is. He is now in that position. He is now the king over Israel, doing what God has called him to do. And the nation starts to enjoy a time of peace, and things settle down. He has been able to settle for the first time ever. We're having been years on the run from Saul and all of that period of the history. He is now been able to settle, and he settles in Jerusalem, and he creates this city that's even named after him, the city of David, within all of that. And he builds a palace, and it's a great palace. And he's sat in his palace thinking to himself, do you know, what is next? What is the next bit of this journey, of this adventure? I'm 43, I'm only 43. I'm not even that old yet. Not far off. But, you know, he as far as he knows, he's got plenty of years ahead of him, and he's already done so much. So in his mind and his thinking is, hold on a minute, I can't be just sat in my palace for the next however many years. What next can I do for the Lord? And so he thinks, well, hold on a minute, I'm sat in this palace, and my God, whose presence is represented and in the ark. We looked at that the other week, and how the ark was brought to Jerusalem. That's that ark, that precious thing that God has chosen to dwell in, is sat in a tent up the road. He thinks, well, it doesn't sit right. It doesn't feel right. So I know, let me build a temple. Let me honor God by building something solid, something better than even my palace, because God is worth honoring. God is worth celebrating. And the heart that he was doing that wasn't out of of trying to big his ego up and all of that kind of thing. I really believe that was done out of a sense of, you know, I love my God, and I want to honor him, and I want to do this thing for him and build something better than just a tent. And actually, you know, I've thought from time to time, which is something I do, I think about the practicalities of things. It's a bit distracting. I don't know if you've ever been invited to somebody's house and you sit and you think, I wonder how they decorated that bit up there, or, oh, that's good. And you start looking at the technicalities of it. And I often think with the tabernacle, well, it must have got worn out, and how did they clean it, and all that kind of thing. But I would think it probably wasn't always that glamorous, and quite difficult to maintain it, which I'm sure that they did do, but probably wasn't really an ideal. So God, so David shares this with Nathan, and he says, "Yeah, no, that's a good idea. I can see where you're going with that. That seems right." But during the course of the night, God reveals to Nathan that actually that's not a good idea, you know, because it's not a God idea. That's not something that God wanted David to do. And so he has the job of going to see David the next day and communicating, you know, this thing that you wanted to do that you're really excited about, you're really passionate about, it's not actually God's will for you. And I love David's response to this, because from what we know of David, you know, David was a guy who was passionate about his Lord. He was passionate about God. He spent lots of time worshipping him. In fact, he has shaped some of the ways that we worship God, because he's written so many of the Psalms and things that were very real expressions of his heart. And you know, David could have taken the hump and he could have said, "Hold on a minute, Lord, look, I should be the one that building this thing, because, you know, I'm the man when it comes to worship. I've set precedents. I've shown people how to do it, and I've really loved you, and I really know how to worship. So surely I've got all the credentials to be able to build this thing. I understand you a lot more than most." And you know, he could have presented a very good argument for why he should be the one to build that temple. But he doesn't get upset or offended. He just simply surrenders his will to Father God's. And he just carries on worshipping and honouring him. How is he able to just simply do that? How is he able to do that without all the sort of the questioning and the working out and the trying to justify? And I'm sure many of you are like me, when, you know, God says no to something, you try and work out and you try and reason and you try and even persuade God that he might have been a little bit wrong and got it wrong. We're very good at that, telling him how the world should be run. But David's relationship with God has been established for many, many, many years, and goes right back to the years that he was in the pasture. And that's the really key thing. That's one of the key things I want us to get hold of this morning, is the foundations that David built many years before, that because of those foundations, he was able to be the man that of God that he needed to be when difficult decisions or uncomfortable decisions might have come his way. Over the years that he was a nobody, and that nobody knew who he was, and he was in the background, he learnt to really love God. He learnt to use the time that he had when he was on his own to just enjoy the creation of God around him and to enjoy the presence of God around him. And also in those times, he was quite vulnerable, being on your own. It's something in my industry we're very aware of. We only have to look in the farming press on a weekly basis and find that people have had accidents and things. But because a lot of us work on our own a lot of the time, we're very vulnerable. And he would have been even more so vulnerable, because I don't think the signal for mobile back then was terribly good. But there were times that he had to rely on God. There were times where he had to protect himself from bears and lions and that kind of thing, but also protect his flock. And there were very real times that he knew that his God was a God of protection around him. So he trusted, he learnt to trust God. Psalm 23 is one of the very famous ones that he wrote. We know it so well, don't we? "The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me." That's something that he learnt in his pasture days. That was something that he learned when he was building foundations in the relationship with God that he had. And that, some 20, 30 years later, is still evident as a strong foundation that he had put into place and that he had built. He also says in Psalm 16, I keep my eyes always on the Lord. With him at my right hand, I will not be shaken. He's not saying that because he's like saying, well, if I say that enough, I'll believe it and then I won't feel a shaken. That is his experience. That is real to him. He knows that he will not be shaken when God is involved, not just involved, but God is walking with him and carrying him. And those foundations that he built, right back in before he was ever of anybody of any significance, which we're all of significance in God's eyes, whatever stage we're at, those were the important times of building those foundations so that he could be the man of God that God had called him to be years and years later. So I want to encourage us this morning to keep building our foundations in him. You know, we can all be at different stages of life at the same time. You know, there can be pockets of our lives that we're having little struggles or issues or challenges with God. But at the same time, there are other areas of our life that we're quite happy with where we're at with God. I don't know if that makes sense, but you know, I know that I'm on a learning journey all the time with God. And I know that there's things that throw up, that life throws up, and I think, you know, I'm not so sure about that, and I don't know the whys and wherefores with that. It doesn't throw everything out the window because I've got strong foundations elsewhere, but it's another opportunity to strengthen that foundation. Does that make sense? Yeah. And I just want to encourage us this morning, whether we've been a Christian for donkey's years or whether we're quite new to it, let's keep an eye on our foundations. Let's be thankful for the strong foundations that we have already built. But where God's revealing to it, and I do believe this morning that God is just revealing to one or two folk this morning that actually there's some foundations that you need to spend some more time in investing in, to strengthen in him. And yeah, just allow the Holy Spirit to reveal those to you this morning. The other thing that I want us to get hold of this morning is the bigger picture of what God said to David in his response to David's desire to build the temple. He said no to the temple, but what he went on to say is that I'm going to establish you and your house, and it will last forever. It will last forever. The temple that Solomon, his son, went on to build, that doesn't exist anymore. That was destroyed and then it was rebuilt. And there's a whole lot of history behind that, which you can read up at some time if you're interested. But that temple was never going to last forever. But what God did promise David was something that would last forever. He said, I'm going to build into you, I'm going to establish your house, and it will last forever. And that is an incredible thing, because for David, he is being promised something far more solid than just something that will last for even a few hundred years. David has become king, but he's acutely aware that the history of Israel up to that point has been very fragile. King Saul expected to be the one whose family line would continue to be king. And David is very aware that at any point, you know, even if it wasn't in him, even if it was after him, that his family line could be snuffed out. But here, God is promising him something that will last forever. And at that point in time, what David wouldn't necessarily have known, well, what he wouldn't have known was that 28 generations of his family would pass, and then the Messiah, Jesus, would be born into it. He wouldn't have had that insight, but what he did know was that God was going to use his family line to change the world. And he was just, wow, you know, that is an incredible honor. And that is an incredible calling and mantle that God has put on him. Up until this point in time, David's focus has been on fulfilling the destiny of God's calling on his life. He has worked hard at positioning himself and putting himself in the place that he knew that God had called him to do. And that's really important. That's a really important thing for us to do. And I'm sure that in this room, at this moment in time, there are folks who are working on getting to the place that God's called them to be. You know, when God tells you something and he reveals something to you, and you know it's going to come to pass, you know you're going to do or be the person that God's called you to be, but at this moment in time, that hasn't yet happened, or the fulfillment of that hasn't yet come about, it's important that we keep striving to get to that place, that we position ourselves in the right way so that the destiny that God has got for us can be fulfilled, so that we can give him the glory and so that we can really be the men and women that God's called us to be. That's really important. And that's how David has worked and how he has operated right up until this point. But all of a sudden, there's a big shift in thinking and a big shift in position, because now we're thinking about legacy. And this is what I want, this is the other thing I really want us to get hold of this morning, is what legacy do we leave for the generations to come after us? A legacy, one of the definitions of legacy, is that it is something that goes beyond our lifetime. And if I'm honest, most of my thinking, a lot of the time, is to do with the now. You know, I get very wrapped up in the now thinking. What do I need to do for the Lord today? What do I need to do for my family today? What is now all about? But actually, God wants us to be in a place where we are aware that what we do now can and will, if we're in the right place, have an effect and on not just the now, but also after us. And there are a lot of people who when I was processing this, that I started thinking about people who leave a legacy. And there's obviously quite a few famous people. We were talking about the Wesley brothers. I can't remember who we were having that conversation with, but we were talking about the Wesley brothers the other day, and some of the hymns that one of them wrote, and you know, the movement of Methodism that sprung up and all that. They left a legacy. They might not have been aware of how long after them that the impact of what they were doing in the 1700s and some things would have even today. But they left a legacy. They made a difference. They made a change. There's a guy called William Wilberforce. What was he famous for? Abolishing slavery. You know, at the time he had, God put something in him that caused him to rise and fight against slavery. And in his lifetime, he achieved something that he not only is remembered for forever, but changed the course of history in slavery. Yes, we're still battling with that in certain areas of society, but, you know, he left a legacy. We had a guy in our youth group who was quite a few years older than me, but when I was about 14, 13, 14, and He was a guy who was absolutely sold out 100% for Jesus. And didn't matter when you spoke to him, he would be just telling you about Jesus, not ramming it down. He just was in love with Jesus. And you could tell with his worship, when he spoke to us, when he did some of the youth work stuff. And he was a really inspiring guy. And a lot of us really looked to him as a bit of a hero in our youth group. Sadly, he was killed in a car accident when he was 23 years old. He was on his way back from, and this is personal, and I was feeling emotional when I was preparing it because it brought me back to a very significant time. But he was on his way back from doing a youth event that God had really used him. And yeah, you know, we don't know the whys. Why did that happen? I don't know. But at his funeral, God reminded me of some stuff that he had revealed to me that he wanted me to do and the way that he wanted to be with my life. Because of Chris and because of the way that he lived his life and because of that event and that time, I made some decisions then that I have never backed down on. Because at the time, you know, as you know, mid-teenager, I was wavering on some stuff. And I look at Chris and I go, do you know, he left a legacy, not just for me, but for other people. He left a legacy that changed my life. That's an incredible legacy for somebody so young to leave. I've got other stories of other people who've invested in me because God told them to. And they will never know the impact that they've had on me and my relationship with God and my outlook on life because they were faithful and they listened to God. They will have left a legacy. And that is evident in me, probably evident in other people. Neil was talking a few minutes ago about mentoring, you know, and about investing in people. You know, those of you who are mentoring our young people, you are amazing. You are doing a fantastic job. And it's, again, an opportunity to leave a legacy and to sow something in. Yes, this is the now that we're living in, but we need to get in our thinking that what we do in the now has a more than a now consequence. We need to be aware and we need to be thinking that what we do for God can last beyond our lifetime. I think back to sort of family members and people praying, and I know that people in my family in generations before who are now no longer with us were people who prayed. People who prayed, and now down to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation, the fruit of what they... Yeah, so is that one? Yep. People who invested back then, you know, I can see the fruit of that now in the generations beyond. And that is the same probably for many, many of us in this room who've got Christian parents, grandparents, great-grandparents who just prayed and invested and taught. What is your legacy? What will your legacy be? Do you know, if for those of us who have got children, we have the opportunity to invest and sow into our children the truth of God and the value that God puts on them, so that they, in turn, can go and be the men and the women that God has called them to be. If we're running businesses, you know, do our businesses have an influence? I think Neil might have been talking about influence a few minutes ago as well, but that was another word that just popped into my thinking, that actually we are people of influence. And when we're people of influence, we can leave something that will last beyond us.
If you're in your workplace, you know, is your mindset that I'll go at 9 o'clock and I'll come at 5 o'clock and I'll rock up back at home and I'll have done my job and I can get on with life again? Well, yeah, you know, sometimes that's how life is. But within that, what's God called me to do in that workplace? What legacy can I leave with the people that I meet? What difference can I make by speaking truth and life into everybody else who might have a boring dead-end job that I've got? Mine isn't, by the way. I'm very blessed to enjoy life, and I don't want to rubbish anybody's job. But you know the point I'm making. We're gonna break bread together in a few minutes. But while we do that, there's just some things I just want to encourage us to reflect on and to align our spirits with Jesus. To do with these couple of areas. And if you're in a place this morning where you're sort of grappling with what your destiny is and what God's called you to do, and actually, am I really in the place that I'm meant to be? Well, I just want to encourage you this morning, keep pressing forward. You know, David went through an incredible hardship to get to the place that God had called him to do. And I think all too often we have a misconception that God will just hand it to us on a plate and we just need to roll over and it's an easy life. It isn't always like that. It often isn't. When God's called us to do certain things, you know, we have to do our bit and we have to work hard at achieving that. And actually, why shouldn't we? Because as we're going to celebrate with breaking of bread, Jesus paid the ultimate for us. We will never out pain or out hardship Jesus. You know, and that's worth remembering. That's not to rubbish any hardship that we're going through and not to not recognize it, but to put it in context. But secondly, let's align our thinking with this whole legacy thing. Let's just ask God, yeah, I don't know that I see what legacy I can possibly leave. And just in the worship, I felt this was a word for at least one person, or if not, but if you are sat here feeling quite worthless and useless, maybe, you know, you're sat thinking, well, what really can I do? What difference can I really make for anybody, let alone leaving something behind? God sees in you not just potential, he sees his child that he loves very much. And he wants you to know this morning that you are worth it. You are worth it because he died for you. You must be worth it because he had you in mind. And whatever God has got, whatever calling he's got on your life, you need to know that you can do it because he is with you. And that whatever God involves you in has the potential to last beyond you. We were talking about no thing broken earlier on. That's been a theme this morning. And that only God can heal our nation. Do you know what? He uses the likes of us to heal our nation. He uses the likes of us to stand up against the injustices of things like slavery and abortion and all the other rubbish that there is in the world. He uses people like us. He has got a destiny for each one of us, but he wants what we do with our destiny to last beyond us. David surrendered his will to the will of God. He surrendered. He didn't try and persuade God otherwise, because he knew that the best place to be in was a place of surrender to the will of God. While we break bread and drink wine this morning, I want to encourage us to use that time to surrender our will once again, or maybe for the first time, I don't know, to the will of God. God, here I am, and I'm here for you. I want you to do in me and through me what you want to do. And you know, when we are in that place of surrender, God is able and has the space to do incredible things.